It looks like we got about 45, 50 minutes just to continue working on the steps. And just that, as I said, we finished step 5 and then we got into step 6 and 7, and that's when the action starts taking place. That's when we can finally get off our bureaus or our desks or our living rooms or our couches or whatever and start doing all of the material which we've collected, all the experiences, and start seeing, okay, now, you know, the challenge is how do we respond to life? And how does life become more meaningful? We are not in this program, AA or Al-Anon, you know, just to stop drinking or just to become independently functional, whatever that means, you know, and stand on our own 2 feet. Yeah, we all have to do that. But life has to be more than that. And especially for most of us, oh yeah, all of the alcoholics, we're always, you know, great daydreamers and Secret Life of Walt and Mitty, and we're always imagining the great things. And what we do in this program then is just not just imagine them, but start being able to practice them. What the program is about then is freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. How do we arrive at those other than just being concepts, but being observable, definable actions in relationship to other people? And this is where we get into these steps now. When we start looking at step 8, we're talking about amends. What we're talking about is restoring relationships. Now, some of us could still be, you know, in the denial aspect by saying, well, I am one of the fortunate ones. I was lucky. My alcoholism never really affected anybody else. That is malarkey. Okay? Because we don't live in a world by ourselves. We live in a world with other people, and sometimes we put expectations on them or make demands of them. Sometimes they retaliate or just refuse, and then we know get a little bit angry or bent out of shape, and we start making demands. Okay. The purpose of these steps now is not to go around confessing all of our faults to absolutely everybody. Again, the purpose of the program is the quality of our sobriety. You know, and we're not going around trying to evangelize the whole world, right? There's nothing worse than a reformed anything in their first year of their whatever reformation, whether it be quit drinking or quit smoking or quit ever. What they're so enthusiastic in the pink stage, and they're so fired up, they want the rest of the world to get all this good news too. And by God, they're going to get it whether they want it or not. And they become pains in the neck, right? And certainly that's not what our job is. When we start looking at it, we're talking about our recovery. We're talking about removing our defects of character. We're talking about, you know, our spiritual growth. At the same time, that spiritual growth is not isolated or walled off from other people. Again, the big problem at the unconscious level, as I started to say at the beginning of the day, is that great feeling of being walled off, and that can be demonstrated in many ways by feelings of superiority or inferiority. Right? We can have a lot of phony inferiority by saying, well, I'm no good, I can't do that, I can't do that. And we continue saying that, believing that, then we're not. That is the excuse for not doing anything. The principle here is our own recovery, right? And why, you know, we've been guided to do these types of things is to rid ourselves, again, of all of the things which were blocking us in relationship to people, things that we were able to sit down in the fifth step and discuss those and come up with attitudes, come up with behaviors, come up with things which have in the past hurt. Then we look at step 8, and then it's there for the quality of our sobriety. How do we restore relationships, or how do we restore harmony within our own lives how do we rid ourselves of the resentments which we carry, or grudges which we carry, or negative feelings which we carry because we've been hurt? All of us have been hurt. We've been hurt, I said that before, by institutions which brought us up, the church, school, whatever, by people who did not love us the way we thought they should have loved us, and who didn't nurture us and didn't do these things. But this happens to be January the 22nd, 1994, and the only thing we can do is what is happening right now. And if we want to know what's going to happen in the future, that's based on how we live this day, not on how we continue to regress back into the past, you know, and say, well, I'm this way today because of something that happened to me, or something that did not happen to me, or someone, you know, did not respond to my needs the way I thought they should have, or I wasn't brought up the right way, and we go on and on and on. Again, successful therapy with alcoholics, as Rossi brought out in Chicago, and this goes way back, at least since 1970, you know, that they looked at a whole bunch of alcoholics, and they looked at all the alcoholics who were not doing too well, who kept going out and doing a little experimenting on the road, who kept going out and having little interrupted successes, who kept going out and making, you know, having slips, whatever that means, you know, because no alcoholic drinks automatically. No, there's no alcoholic that automatically, you know, is going along and then by he stops and says, gee willikers, what do you know? Beverage alcohol just sipped down my throat. Isn't that amazing? How did that happen? Life does not work that way. For an alcoholic, there is all kinds of telegraphing of signs that go on before we're put in a position where we have to pick up a drink, and we're picking up a drink to change the way we feel. The way we feel at that time is a negative feeling, and we want to change that. In the little brain, hypothalamus gland goes into the brain looking for the good things which alcohol brought. And in some of our cases, it could be in the hundreds or even much, much greater. When we used alcohol at the beginning, it was the answer and did cause euphoria, you know, did dissolve away any type of hostilities which might have been there, what they called lowering inhibitions, and did all kinds of things and gave us permission to do things which we would not normally have done. And we reflect back on some of those, and it's only going into the brain to look, find the good thing. And now when we get down to looking at the relationship, we have to say, yeah, well, we might be still have some resentments because we live in a world with people. And now, is that blocking us from living freely? Is that blocking us from serenity? Serenity means the capacity to use our intellect and our will and to allow those to function and guide us and govern us even when everything else is falling apart. Serenity doesn't mean sitting on top of a mountain gazing at your belly button going, you know, oh, I don't know what you do when you do that, right? But a lot of people think serenity means you just have to be off in some blissful, euphoric state of unconsciousness or something. That's not what serenity is. Serenity is the capacity to keep using your intellect, brain, and will to guide you, you know, through situations in life, even when everything else is falling apart. You know, it's pretty easy or natural, you know, to be joyous when everything's going our way. But life is not like that. If you're on a road in life that does not have any bumps, you ain't going anywhere, right? And that's the whole business of what the steps are about, is giving us the proper tools. When we get into the relationship business, you know, we have to start looking at what is that costing us? You know, when we're carrying grudges, when we're carrying resentments, when we're carrying hostile feelings, when we're carrying that. Very simply, we allow people to live in our head rent-free. Right? And we're spending our energy negatively, you know, wondering, you know, why they did that, and and most probably losing sleep over it and waking up in a not good mood over it. And the person who is the object of all of this resentment is not even aware. They're sleeping very soundly and having a marvelous time and not even aware that you're spending all this negative energy and getting ulcers and everything for nothing. When we are able to get into the ninth step then, and make a list. Again, making the list is important because it concretizes what's going on. You know, it's not saying, oh yeah, I have resentments against this, that, or this particular thing. But what it does is it concretizes and brings down to specific events or people, things of which we can take action. Right? And then we are able to take the proper type of action, which is basically is forgiveness. But we know that because of our behavior, because of what alcoholism brought into our life, there were some, you know, things which we are not going to go out and brag to the world about, things which we certainly don't want to, you know, send in to call up the radio station and tell them about this great event, all of that type, you know, and so that, and we know this involves certain people. And at that particular time, or when this process is going on, those people are continuing to live in our head rent-free. And that's how we get hooked on that, and get hooked on the resentment, and get hooked on, and for many, it can be, you know, the addiction process again. It can be that's where we're getting our energy, you know, and it's negative energy, it's energy over again. And that's what we call the shadow side of it, and it's not being in the redeemed side of it, we're able to go and get forgiveness. Now the bottom line of this is the quality of our sobriety. Yes, we have to be considerate of other people's feelings. Yes, we have to be considerate of other people, you know. But the bottom line is, what's going on with me? And so that I will be able to free myself from these chains which are binding me or robbing me of my freedom. For instance, you know, if I owe somebody... Oh, I remember my first, oh gosh, in one drinking incident, this was after I was ordained and I was in a parish, and I had borrowed Joe, this fellow Joe Mingo's famous. I saw him and I said, Joe, you are the most famous character in the world. Every AA group in the United States knows about you, but he had given me his car because I was one of the priests in a parish, and I dinged the fender, right? That's after I lost the car, or before I lost the car, I forget, but I didn't find the car for another whole day. But when I found it, the fender, and it was $72 to fix the fender. This was way back, guys, so you can just remember how long ago this was. Okay? And so I used to keep saying in the AA meetings, you know, for the first, I think it was about 15 years, I kept saying, you know, if Joe Mingo was to walk right through that door now, and come into the room, boom, what would be the first feeling in my stomach? I owe him $72. And thus, we cannot allow other people to have the power over us to make us cast our eyes down in guilt and shame. Because again, negatively, that is what's going to bring about, you know, the feelings which would ultimately lead us into getting back to another drink or some of the other addictive behavior. And as I said, alcoholics do not automatically pick up a drink. There's a telegraphing of signs. Telegraphing of signs, by that I mean giving themselves away. And by that I mean like, The vision goes from very positive to very negative. What do I mean? The coffee cold. The toast is burnt. The eggs are greasy. The room's too full of smoke. The boss is an idiot. The wife is a... Can't say the word. Right? Really. And all of a sudden, we start blaming everything around us. Right? And that's a very definite sign of what we call ego deflation has no longer been deflated. And His Little Majesty the Baby, the omnipotence, the kingship for His Majesty the Baby or queenship, now is again going to reassume the direction of the universe. And we'll do that in not just hostile ways, but in ways of manifesting negative interpretation and negative statements about what's going on. Everybody's out of whack but Johnny, right? And the whole group, well, now that's what's so beautiful about AA, because when that happens to AA, people split and go find their own group. And that means we have another group, right? That's the history of how it started, and that's the history of how it continues to go. You know, people say, I don't want to do it that way, so I go find my own thing. But basically, the point, the principle I'm trying to make is if, okay, so if I see Joe Mingo, boom, it's a negative feeling. And until I'm able to go, you know, to him and explain, look, you know, this happened in 1964, right? I know it happened. This happens to be, like, I think it must have been 1975 when I finally sat down with him. And it was a big production, too, because he's the lawyer in the House of Parliament. And so I drove up to the House of Parliament in Ottawa in a 1917 fire truck with one St. Bernard parked on it, right? And left it back at the front door and went in and sat with him and said, look, you know, the $72 is not the issue. It is for me, but it's not the amount of money, but it's, you know, what happens when I reflect on that incident, it's a negative feeling comes to us. And so he says, well, I don't want the money. I said, I don't care what you want the money or not. You can do whatever the heck you want with the money. You can give it away, you can burn it, you can, I don't know, throw it out the window. No, I don't care. That's not the issue. The issue is that my responsibility, capacity to say yes for the quality of my sobriety calls upon me and requires that we do this. So that the next time I meet Joe Mingo, which I have many times since, the first rush that comes to me is not, I owe him $72. Now that's just a demonstration or an example of what we're trying to talk about. In other words, what I'm trying to say is it's our responsibility. You are the forger of your own destiny. You are the one who is responsible for your own happiness. You are going to be as happy on the face of this earth as you darn well make up your mind you want to be. Nobody owes you a thing. Right? Now that kind of might sound like a lot of individualism and a lot of stuff like that, but when it gets right down to the final line is we're alone. You know, I get right back to my friend Billy Graham. Right? There ain't nothing, no U-Haul behind a hearse. And there ain't nobody else there but you. And so what I'm saying is if you owe somebody $5 or if you owe them $5,000, or if you owe them $50,000, you know, and you're walking down the street and you see that person coming the other way and you have not done anything about that, your automatic reaction then has to be to flight, flee, and what you do is you dive in the telephone booth, open up the manhole cover and jump in, get under the bushes, do whatever. And what you're doing is allowing a person then to have power over you, which is allowing you to demonstrate feelings of guilt and shame, and you're not doing anything about it. So you have to do something about it. And the big book will talk about that lots of times, right? We must not shrink at anything. We must not be running from creditors. All of these things. Nor am I saying that you got to go up and confess everything and end up in jail immediately. That's not always the right answer. So you go to him and you say, look, you know, when I was working for you, I scammed with $5,000, and I'm, you know, in a recovery program now, and I'm trying to do something to get my life straightened out. So what I'm going to be able to do is to pay you back 25 cents a week. And by the year 2099, we might be even. Now, if he has a heart attack and dies, it's his problem. Right? I really don't mean to be that stern about it, but I'm trying to make a point, you know. We're not out to rescue the whole world, and nor are we out, you know, to change other people. What we're trying to talk about when we talk about the amendment step and making the list, you know, is that. That it's for the quality of our sobriety. So the next time we meet that guy, even though we've just paid him back $1.75, we know we've taken some appropriate action. Now, to be more realistic about it, you know, if we can do better, yeah, and more reasonable about it, and everything, fine. You know, then we're called upon to do that. But we're not called upon to say, well, the person's not making any smoke about it, they're not raising any questions about it, so I guess we just let it go. That way we don't grow. That way there's no stretching. That way there's no making amends. That way we are not taking responsibility for our past behavior. And that's sloughing it off. And we're always going to feel shame then. We're always going to feel guilt. You know, the guilt at that particular time could be appropriate. There is certainly appropriate guilt. But it's not something which should be driving us into denying. And so, I'm just talking money. Because that's the easy one to talk about. There's all kinds of other situations. I've had that, you know, people have been harmed or hurt by our inconsideration, our lack of, you know, just taking their well-being into consideration and all kinds of things, general selfishness. You know, into the big book again, page 62, we must rid ourselves of this selfishness, we must, or it kills us. And it says that the cause of all of our symptoms is usually self-centeredness, you know? We step on somebody's toes, they retaliate, and then the ping-pong game starts, right? The ping-pong game which will go on forever until we get out of the world of competition of who's right and who's wrong, and why did it happen, and whose responsibility that is, and that type of thing. So we're living in a world with people. There's people all around. Our alcoholism definitely, you know, affected other people in resentments and in retaliations and in hurt, even if it wasn't done intentionally. You'll say other people kind can ask you, but the person who I owe or should be making the resentments to has passed on, or I can't find them. Then do something. You know, do something anonymously that you are taking the action. Anonymously, there's tons of good, worthy causes in our society of which you can make a donation, or you can volunteer some time, or you can do something, and you can make the intentionality is what counts, the intentionality of why I'm doing this, right? And so that my sobriety will become of a higher quality, so I will continue to grow, so I'm accepting the responsibility of my behavior, I'm not passing it off and sloughing it off and saying, oh well, the world's not raising a cane, and all the world knows I've made resentments now because I've been sober. That is not true, right? And if we expect everybody to understand what we're doing, in some cases the person won't understand. Maybe they won't accept. All but you know what you've done is your part. And then you, because of that exercise, will feel tremendously better, you know, in the real spiritual growth, and you'll be free from having the hook in you, right? Or allowing another hook to live in you, and that's the denial of freedom. So that's just a very fast overview of amendment steps. The philosophy or the thinking behind of it, again, is freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. If at times it's not going to bring that, then we have to sit down and talk to somebody. You know, if we're scared, if we come up with the fact that, you know, we've just hit the Brinks truck for $7 million, and if we go and make an amendment, we might well end up in jail, we better talk to somebody. Right? Okay. Any questions on those? Just on the purpose of amendments. Again, it's the quality of it, not the person we're making amendments to. Yes, we owe them injustice. If we took $5 injustice, until we pay the $5, we owe them injustice. The virtue of justice always demands, it requires two people and two things. You know, I have a hat, and he wants my hat, and the hat's $10, give me the $10, I give him the hat. Good. Justice has been carried out. It's when sometimes we've acted unjustly, and then we have to straighten that out. Questions on just, we'll back it up four steps, and what the action is in taking these, because 6, 7, 8, 9 get fluffed over pretty quickly, even in meetings. They're not always the ones which we dwell the longest on. But again, it's the action. Okay, when I look at that now, I have to say, what does that step motivate me to do today? And it's not certainly not just in all of the drinking behaviors or what was going on because of alcohol. No, because we'll get to step 10, and that means promptly admit when we're wrong. Now. No, because just because of the fact that we stopped drinking or drugging or taking the drug doesn't mean that all of the behavior stopped automatically. But that we have to continue looking at it and saying, hey, what are the demands or the challenges that are given to us, and how do we respond to them? So am I really committed to the philosophy of the program, which, you know, demands that I continue to grow, to stretch? Sometimes, lots of people maybe don't want to do it. That's okay. But we still got to do it. Doesn't mean that it's always going to be the most glorious, blissful thing that we could possibly think of doing. But what are we up against? And I'll try to end off with you know, the face of the enemy, to really know what we're up against. You know? Because how we get in the program, and we have our own reasons in that, but when we get really down to it, just the really important stuff of what we're really up against. You know? And it's not to be treated oversimplified or in ways that saying, well, everything is just fine because I've stopped drinking. There's a lot of work to be done, and I hope I'm waking us up to some of that. So any questions on 6, 7, 8, 9? Actions which are there, which have to be taken, and we have to start demonstrating a relationship with other people in a positive way that are going to bring about, you know, our own growth and bring about harmony and what we call reconciliation, basically forgiveness, and not be carrying old hurts around and old wounds and old grudges. If you're brought up in the Irish Catholic society, it's amazing, you know, the families that don't talk to, members of families that don't talk to each other, just for all kinds of reasons. In my own family, already, see, you know, we get together at funerals. Kat. The question is, how far do I have to go in being considerate of other people's feelings? Right? And again, it's, you know, what has already been said to me today is, you know, in the recesses of our own heart, we know, you know, and we can just ask ourselves, you know, is there something I can do to reconcile this relationship or this incident with the person? It's up to us to take the action first. And that's humility. And again, unless the humility continues to be practiced, the humility disappears, and we get back on our high horse again of directing the universe. No, sir, there are some ego-deflating actions which go on, whether we've been sober 3 weeks or 30, 40 years, right, to continue to be able to do those. Now, when you say, how far do we go? Well, we just have to look and say, what is the relationship? You know, I don't really know exactly. You're talking about how far back we have to go, or to sit down and talk with the person, you know, and just share feelings. That's the greatest gift you can give. You know? Just stating the fact that this is the way I feel, right? I am not blaming, and you are not the cause of my feelings. You know, so many fights begin, you know, or end up by, look what you made me do. know, which is a totally invalid statement, right? If you didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that. If you did this, so I did this. So we're back to the ping pong game. And it's going to go on forever, right? It had it when they went, oh, great Americans were always this ping pong game against the Russians. Well, the Russians collapsed, so now we have to find different people who to have our ping pong games with so that we can, you know, exert power and feel good about ourselves because of the power. That's not what I'm talking about, any ping pong game. But just to go and say if there's something that's causing you some degree of uncomfortableness, any degree of uncomfortableness, to go and say, hey, this is how I feel. And you're not responsible. The other person is not responsible for how you feel. It's the stimulations that brought it, external factors, everything else. But they also, you know, should have the presence of mind to be able to listen to you. You're not blaming. You're not excusing. You're not doing anything. You're the one that has to deal with your feelings. And you say, how far would you just sit down and talk with them? Hey, what do you think about this? Other questions? Yes. Okay, if you're willing to make some amends to somebody, willingness, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, the how of the program, and if you're willing to make those amends and you take appropriate action to make the amends and the person slams the door in your face, that's the scenario, then you've done what you can. And if you don't get a time to discuss it, write it down and just mail it. You've done the action. And all you're saying again is, this is how I feel, and this is what I want to express. I'm not blaming you for what happened, or, you know, so much of it gets in, well, you did this, so that made me do this, and when Nana does this, I did this, and we're into the ping pong game again. And that's not what we're about. No, what we're about is just being able to share the feelings and say, okay, there is a feeling that's blocking me from total freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. And it involves this situation or relationship with somebody, right? And I, for my part, don't feel that wholesome about it, right? And I'm certainly, you know, willing to forgive. And I just want to be able to express that's how I feel. You can write it down, mail it to them, and that's over. You've done the act, and once it's over, right? And you don't go around again with that hook that's in your head, living in your head rent-free, you know, causing you to lose sleep and getting ulcers and all kinds of, you know, negative things like that. It's not easy. It can be some of the most demanding or humiliating or ego-deflating or, you know, honesty, brutal honesty. This program demands brutal honesty, and that's when we have to start practicing that. Not easy. A lot of us don't like facing that stuff at all. You know? But again, when we're talking about the quality of the sobriety in the person. Yes.
Say for instance, say you're going back 20 years now, and there was a situation where you were in this big argument. And say, of a triplet for and now you're willing to go and talk about this situation, but you say in your own head, oh well, you know, this person did that, and this is why I done that, and it's really not bothering me.
Of course it's bothering you, playing ping pong with it, right?
No, I just question on that.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. And I can see where I went wrong.
Yep.
I can see my part in it, you know. And I can see why I went wrong, you know. And what happened and all that. What I'm trying to ask you is, would I go to that person after 20 years and talk about this situation? You know,
Is it ever going to bring harm to another person?
No.
Okay. That's again, principle, a heavy one. We can never do anything, you know, to make us feel better, quality of sobriety, or save our hide that's going to bring harm to another person. Right? And so I just ask you that. But if you're wondering about this thing, I just, you know, for 20 years, evidently it's not a seething event that's going on in life, but you could write them a funny letter, right? Or joke about it, or do something. You know?
And I never brought it up. So, like, I decided that I will go the next morning,
to you in this hypothetical case is has the person really forgotten all about it? The person, you know, who feels they should be able to do something in a gesture of forgiveness or reconciliation to be reconciled, you know, have they really forgotten all about it? Have you mentioned it?
No. Not to her.
No, not to her. But to anybody else?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But that's okay. You know, then I'd say, yeah, I'd do something about it. Wait until the thing is right, and then just, you know, write a little letter or, you know, joke about it, or just get it out. So it's not boxing you in any way. Other questions? Okay, so we get down to where, you know, these are actions which demand a lot of humility and a real internalization of the steps, right? We're no longer just fluffing around saying, I'm an alcoholic. This is getting down to, if we want quality of life, right. And to do it, you remember, we're doing it in a joyous way. No, it's not one of these things, life is such a grind, you know. I mean, boy, this is serious business. Don't mess with my sobriety. And again, when we get that type of over-definition, I'm going to find it. I'll find something. You know, and I'll find another compulsivity coming out someplace else. So we get to step 10. There's no way we can look at step 10 whatsoever if we haven't taken step 4. Okay? What step 10 is the continuation of step 4. Again, freely. You know, and again with faith, and again with trust, and again with acceptance of self. So it's sometimes we get on the muscle and we're going to get this stuff done come hell or high water, right? And you become an absolute terror to live with in any city, right? And if things aren't going my way, boom, the world's going to know about it. With step 10, the most important word in step 10 is when. Promptly admit when we are wrong. Okay? And again, the only being wrong is not to try. And being, I mean, you won't get me using the words right and wrong. It's when are we acting responsibly? But it means that we, once we've gone through all of the steps, you know, the only step, in my own experience, the only step that I've been fortunate enough through the grace of God and the million meetings and a lot of this thing, you know, it's the first half of the first step. Right? I have not had to take up a drink or use any there. And I use this a lot. I was saying to somebody where they were saying, well, the book's outdated, or could the book be outdated? Well, we got to realize the history that it comes out of, but that's not the divine inspiration of the book. The divine inspiration of the book is, no matter how much we know about it and how much we can study it, I personally can still pick it up, look at it, and go, uh-oh, I haven't seen that for a while. And if I haven't seen that for a while, that means I haven't done it for a while, right? And then we're back in the mental gym. Oh, who's messing with the book? When did they put that in? God, they changed this thing since last time I read it. And I'm just dealing with these 45 pages. The rest I can read for just fun, right? But God's the mud. No, right here, page 99. But we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay the penalty by a spree. All relationship is to be resumed. It must be on a better, must, again, be on a better basis. All right. And so when we get to step 10, we're talking about continued conditioning therapy. There's no such thing as graduating. There's no such thing as, I've been in long enough, so now I can graduate. And what step 10 again is the same thing. Is we know we've done 4, we've done 5, we're free of that type of stuff. We know that we have a shadow side. We know we ask God to remove all these defects of character, but they don't get removed. You know? We become consciously aware of them. We don't see the part when, if we pretend they're not there, they're going to get us for sure. All right, that's the absolute truth. Right, and that is a reality. If we say, "Oh well, I've done what I can, so it's gone, it's disappeared, and it's not part of me anymore," that is real denial. And if it's anger, or if it's the resentments, or if it's intolerance. And again, when I'm talking intolerance, is not being able to accept other people. To redeem that is going to those people that we don't accept, or perhaps, we think ourselves superior to, and how do we open ourselves up to receive their gifts, right? Now, if we're not doing those types of actions, we stay blocked. When you just look at racism, oh my God, now how many people here are racist? There's not one of us that's going to admit we're racist, right? But we all are. I was brought up in Irish, Catholic society in Montreal, right? And our whole game was picking on the frogs, It was terrible. And this was a Friday night sport, right? Let's fight, right? And always the little guy, like me, a 5'7" 3/4", going to kick the bejabers out of a 200-pound bartender. It's always those types of stories that go on. And when you hang around AA, you'll always hear about the great macho fight the little guy had, right? Oh, but you never hear the times he got that living crap kicked out of him, right? We got to forget about that again. The Second World War was not a pleasant thing. Vietnam was not a pleasant thing. People didn't line up the next day to get back in and go and spill blood for the glorious cause. But go to a VFW picnic now, or reunion, or Vietnam, and you'd think it was the most glorious time the boys ever had in their whole life, right? And again, it's the same thing. Because what's functioning in the brain is, the pain disappears, the guilt disappears, the shame disappears. Can you imagine if the only thing was uppermost in our mind was the times we messed up, and with all the guilt and shame and remorse that the alcoholism had brought in families and relationships and weddings and parents, and oh my God. Can you imagine if that was, we'd all be looking for a thing as high as the CN Tower to jump off of, right? And so now that all disappears, and the only thing that keeps coming back, we keep going in for, is what are the good times, you know? And so in step 10, what we're doing is we're getting a better appreciation. We have sponsors that can talk to us honestly. If we are not talking to somebody, we already are in trouble. And again, it gets back to isolation, walled off, alone. It means different from loneliness. Not part of humanity. I don't participate in it. I'm going to observe it. Right? I'll observe the world and life and not be part of participatio. So what we're getting at here is, now in step 10 is we look at those things. We've looked at the things that have blocked us. Okay, we've taken some action. Direct amends where other people did not get hurt. I've seen some very vicious things, people making amends, you know, and we got to think about it and talk to people before we do. I mean, all these guys that come out of treatment centers are still hostile to heck for people putting them in there and then say, wife, sweetheart, I'm going to take my fifth step with you. You're going to get it. They wonder why. Chop. Right? It goes on. And we have to say, hey, we've got to make sure we're not going to be hurting other people, even though we're bleeding all over the place ourselves. We got to make sure that we're not using that, you know, to inflict pain on other people. If I could do step 11 now, and then when I get back, I'm just going to do the face of the enemy, and then step 12, which is gratitude. Okay? And that's the silver thread which must go through everybody's life. If you want to be a carpenter, you've got to hammer nails in wood. And if you want to be a fancy skater, you know, you have to keep fancy skating like 6 hours a day. And if we want to do things, you know, like, if I want to be a doctor, go to medical school, right? Now we get down to prayer, and if it's going to be anything, we have to be able, you know, to take the time and the discipline. And it's much easier to stay too busy to pray. Believe me, even as a priest, right? You can do the ritual things which are good, because that's all in people, groups coming together and expressing gratitude and everything. What prayer is listening. The ability to listen. Listening in silence. And that, you know, is not easy, and it's certainly not, you know, second nature to the alcoholic who needs all this type of excitement and stimulation and everything going on around us all the time, you know, with both feet firmly planted in midair going absolutely nowhere, right? But boy, are we moving, right? Oh, you ask anybody, how are you? Oh, you don't know how I am. Let me tell you how I am, right? I got in the office at 6:30 this morning. Well, what did you get in the office at 6:30 for? Well, read the paper, right? So, there is no one type of prayer that's going to suit every type of temperament, right? And there's no one type of prayer that is better than the other type of prayer. And there are many different types of prayer, right? There's meditative prayer and there's, you know, intellectual. Okay. So, centering prayer, which has become quite popular in the past 20 years. Which means we just center on ourselves, right? Put everything out of our mind, and you get a mantra, Maranatha, that's the word Jesus with us or something, and you just keep repeating that. And taking times of meditation, it's the same thing, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 in the afternoon. Transactional analysis is something like the same thing, right? It's taking the time, you know, each day, you know, putting aside some time where you are alone and quiet. And that, you know, in my lifestyle, it's easy because where I live is a chapel right in the house, and the oblates, we have our rule to go by, and what we do, you know, is the first thing in the morning. We are able to go in there and say what we call lauds, which is the morning prayers from the divine office. And there's set in your day. And then with the brothers, the good shepherd, we do that evening prayer at 5:10 in the evening after we've fed everybody and before we start putting them to bed. Again, those are communal prayers in community, you know, giving thanks. All right. But that's not the only way, you know. And certainly in our history and in our commitments and what Eucharist is and the celebration of Eucharistic banquets and liturgical prayer. Fine. You know, and they can be very good for reasons, but they're, you know, that doesn't mean that everybody has the same type of prayer. Some, you know, people would be alone. Some people still love the rosaries, just whipping off the rosary beads, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, whatever is comfortable for the person to do, to be able to put themselves in a frame of being where they're able to listen and become more aware of what's going on in this world around them, what's going on in their world. Right? Now, it can be, certainly, music is a very great, great help in that. One of the problems that we have is that we are left brain biased. Left brain bias before, in 1982, we came out, the scientists came out and learned all about bicameral consciousness, okay? Which means that in the brain, you've got a left brain and you've got a right brain side, okay? European, Canadian, American style, for the most part, we are left brain biased. In other words, we write with our right hand, it's the left brain that's making it do that, okay? And we are, okay, what the left brain does is that very logical, okay, very inductive, very descriptive, very analytical all the time. And it gets something and it chops it up into all little parts until it can comprehend what it's about. It's very not synthesis, doesn't bring things together, keeps dividing, right? And just you look at our decompartmentalization of the way we do things and our great trust for you know, computerization and understanding everything right down. Okay, in 1982 they came across and said, hey, that's great for some people, but not everybody is like that. And in our society, what we've done is we've killed the right brain function. The right brain function is one of synthesis. The right brain function is one of dance. It's one of song. It's one of, I mean, how many of us were brought up in Anglo-Saxon, waspy, even Catholic waspy things that had much to do with dance or song, you know? Nothing. With our whole response to Mother Earth, you know, we can learn a million and one things from Aboriginal spirituality, you know, in the appreciation of the spirit and stuff like that. When, you know, now you're getting it very, very quickly here, but when there is conversion, when there is real spiritual conversion, it always involves great music, right? I'm not talking about acid rock or another giveaway by age, nor am I talking about the banjo stuff, which I like, you know, I really love that banjo stuff, right? But we're just talking about a greater appreciation, you know, of what really brings that about. And we can think of great, great songs which come through, pieces of music, right? Which really enhance. And so that's also a type of prayer. That's also a type of listening. That's also a type of putting ourselves in presence of the Creator, God, higher power, whatever, you know, it is for you. You know? And how do we celebrate that? How do we expressly celebrate that? Now, you know, see, in Africa, they think totally different, right? They're very, very right brain. You know, and there was over 4,000 bishops in the Catholic Church. So they got all the bishops together in Rome because the Pope calls them together for what they call that limina, and I want to find out what's going on. And so the Americans and Canadians get over and say, well, this is the way it is. 2 and 2 is 4, and that's the way it'll always be. And the Africans are going, that's fine for you, but that doesn't mean you have all the answers. We're not to blame. If that's the way it works for you, that's fine. But third world is quite a bit different. And Africa is even different. Right? And when we get in, as, you know, as Anglo-Saxons brought up WASPI Catholicy, and we start looking at some of our Aboriginal dancing, you know, in their spiritual dances, we look at it and say, you know, we don't understand that, and we don't, and you can't like what you don't understand. So what I'm just trying to say is, we all are called to prayer, right? And we're called, what that is listening. And what that is not, no, because so many of them, get out of here before I hear anything, right? And we're going to talk to God and or our higher power or whatever, and we'll lay all kinds of demands on them and that type of thing, and then split. And that's not what it is. I do believe, you know, that congregation or groups coming together, you know, to pray is very important, you know. Also, you know, to be doing that in a faith-filled body is also very important. It also connects us with people. It connects us with creation, with universe, with all of those types of things, right? But it also, in private prayer, is to listen, you know? And everybody's got to try. And there are so many books out on it now that, you know, it's great. Certainly even in the AA books, if you go to the AA stores, you'll find all kinds of, certainly the one that we all know, the 24-hour book, right? To take that and to give that its proper place in your day, right? And that is very important. We talk about prayer and meditation. Meditation is constructive imagination. No? Sometimes people, think meditation means I must go into some type of a trance and have an out-of-body experience and kind of float around the room in levitation. And no, it's not that at all, right? But it's constructive type of imagination, because God speaks to you in 5 ways. God speaks to you through your brain. God speaks to you through your will, heart. God speaks to you through your memory. God speaks to you through your emotions. God speaks to you through your imagination. Those are 5 antennae that are up there. If you close 2 antennae down, there are only 3 left. And you're only getting 3 out of 5 of the messages that are coming through to you from all aspects of life. And so what our responsibility or our challenge is what do I do, you know, in that solidarity which I'm talking about, you make your home in me, I make you in you, God loves you and all this, you know, which is important to keep the 5 and 10 eye up there so that we are going to be able to listen to the messages. Now, if I'm not going to put myself in the environment to hear the messages, I'm not going to hear anything. No. If I'm not going to, you know, me as the priest certainly have, you know, read scripture just to know that this is what Jesus did for me, because I'm a Roman Catholic priest, and he says, go and wash people's feet, and I will show you what to do. No. and just read it for that. But there's many other ways, other things we can read and take and ponder, and even Mother Nature, you know. As long as we don't take one little thing, one, and make it, this is the only way it can happen. And unless you do it my way, no, there's no other way. That is proven time and time again, can be destructive to people. So, but, you know, what we're called upon is to say thank you. We're called upon, you know, to make some type of, if somebody says, I love you, bang, you know, you got to make a decision. Am I going to flight or flee or what, right? And this is what God's expressing to us all the time. And if we can't respond to that, you know, by listening and saying, okay, how do we grow? Nobody can do your work for you. You can go to seminar upon seminar upon seminar upon seminar and stay just in mental gymnastics, right? And get all of the stuff going and never get down to language of the heart. And what prayer is language of the heart. And God knows all of those feelings, higher power, whatever you want to call them, knows all of those feelings in you. And it's not a matter of learning. You know when we ruined prayer? When we made printing presses, right? And then we got all this words coming at us, you know? And the words are coming at us, and many times we're reeling off the words, and the words have nothing in reasonable facsimile with what's going on in our heart, right? And then we say, it doesn't mean anything to me. And so there are times, you know, certainly, I'm not saying that the printed prayer cannot be helpful, but there's times when we can be furious at God. Express it. At least express it. You know, some of the greatest prophets did. Oh my God, curse the day I was born. I'm not going to do it. You know? And they didn't, every time they were talked to, they didn't jump up and say, wowee, it's going to be a real great trip. No. But, you know, if that's where we are, that's what we got to honestly express, because God is Father who loves us, higher power is Father who loves us, Spirit, great Spirit, loves us, right? And knows what we're going through. But if I, out of fear, and basically it's fear, because maybe I'm going to change, you know? And we get comfortable in our own way. And as long as we're comfortable, we're not going to stretch to change. It's only when the pain gets too great that we say we got to change. It's 5 to 8. Let's quit till 8:30. What do you want? Quarter after. Okay. Very good. 12.